If your daily schedule, the way you spend your time all day long, hour by hour, were organized in your ideal way with respect to when and how you are online, how would it look? The reason I ask is because it's gradually becoming obvious to me that the time that I'm spending online is totally chaotically scattered throughout my day. And I think that was probably worse when I was using social media all the time.
Right.
And that's because, obviously, as we've gone around and around about, that software is designed to interrupt you and bring you back. But that works so well, I think, because it feeds on this neurological thing that causes us to check our feeds at sort of impulsive, random times. And I really don't feel like that's healthy. And not in the obvious way, not in the way that we've talked about before, that everyone's talked about distractions and, you know, like our shortening attention span. I mean, I bet I would do better stuff online if I were going online deliberately and going offline deliberately.
This comes at an interesting time because I was thinking about this same sort of thing just last night. This last month of my life has sort of destroyed any semblance of like a schedule that I used to have. And I've been sort of in like emergency response mode, not really having any differentiation between a Monday and a Tuesday and a Saturday and a Sunday. And I was sitting in bed last night at 9 p.m. working, and I realized that I didn't necessarily love that reality. And of course, working means sitting on my iPad, browsing the internet, trying to assemble these different pieces for this project. And I actually tried to fix this problem in my own life by rejiggering my home screen and dock on my iPad, because basically it's always in work mode and the apps on my dock are working apps. But I realized that like I don't really need them there. And the fact that I open up my iPad and those apps are there in this spot of priority makes me feel like I should be opening them at all times. So I just kind of took everything off and started moving things around so that I could have a screen that fit my life when I wanted to rest and not do work stuff. I think I have always desired to have these devices that like know my life and know my schedule and change themselves depending on what mode I should be in. But it's really hard to make the model of technology that we have in front of us fit that, especially if you have social media and you're constantly drawn to check Instagram stories or Twitter or Facebook or what have you. I mean, there's no wrong time to check those. I actually saw that there was a new like either commercial or series of commercials that Twitter is doing where they're interviewing celebrities. Have you seen these?
On TV?
I don't know where they are. I just saw it online. But like there's an ad with Chrissy Teigen where she's talking about how she uses Twitter, and she's basically saying in this like, you know, funny way that the Twitter ad makes sound very appealing that she's always on Twitter.
Isn't that super cool and fun?
Yeah, yeah. You know, I fall asleep checking it and I wake up checking it. And at 3 a.m. when I pee, I check it then too. You know, isn't that great? Isn't that fun? Yeah. And that's just the way of these networks, right? Like that's what they're designed to do, is fill any second of free time that you might have. And you'll never be bored, but there certainly is a trade-off there.
Yeah, and what's occurred to me that's horrified me in the last little while, since I've stopped using Facebook for kind of important communication, keeping in touch with family, that sort of thing, like that's an activity that used to keep me on Facebook, and then a bunch of extra unnecessary stuff would happen. Really, almost all of that communication has moved to Apple services, and for a while, I've been thrilled about that basically iMessage and iCloud photo sharing and the comments on there is taking the place of social media. And then I gradually realized they're not any better at that. like those notifications still come in instantly. And like when an iMessage comes in, you know it's there. And the compulsion to go check it is arguably stronger than it is if you get a Facebook notification. And same goes for iCloud Photos. So it's not, you know, Apple is not this silver bullet here. Their services have just as much work to do to sort of fit into a healthy respect of the user's time as anybody else's. And, you know, it does seem sort of like they're starting to build towards those kind of features, but how is that supposed to work? How is iMessage supposed to know you don't want to be interrupted by this particular thing right now, as opposed to any other text message, which could be super urgent? It does come down, you know, I wasn't even thinking about it that way, but as you said, it totally does come down to the device level. Like every device needs to understand what's going on for you in a very high definition way and a very personalized way in order for stuff coming in to come in at the right time. But I was also thinking about going out on purpose to the internet as a deliberate choice. Some people have the discipline to use email this way, you know, like people say they only check email at the top of the hour when they're working or whatever it is. That always seemed sane to me because it's not like any email couldn't wait an hour, but that isn't something I do either. I still do it compulsively. So it goes both ways, and I'm not sure where it's supposed to start.
Do you remember years ago, either right at the same time at the iPad or even maybe before the iPad, there was that prototype video of Microsoft Courier tablet? Do you remember those videos?
No, I have no recollection of that.
There is this thing, and I mean, obviously it made an impression on me because I'm remembering it all these years later, but they put this video out, or it was like an internal video that was made external, of this tablet concept they had that was basically two iPads sandwiched together with an Apple Pencil, which sounds weird, but was actually kind of awesome. It was more like a notebook. And the idea was that there was almost like one screen that was for drawing and another screen that was for collecting. I believe that the people that were working on this device actually ended up becoming 53 and making paper for the iPad.
They were Microsoft employees first?
I guess.
Or maybe it was an agency that they hired to do a concept.
Yes. Yeah. Something along the... Or people that worked at Microsoft. You know, I don't know. And this is, this is, you know, 10 years ago almost at this point, or maybe it is 10 years ago.
Right.
But in any case, the way that they kind of pitched it was this thing will fit around your life and your work in whatever way makes sense for you. And there was almost something about the idea that like you needed to input with a pencil and not a keyboard. And because of that, it was pushing you more in the moment. And it wasn't something that you were supposed to like browse Twitter on or a social network like Twitter. It was meant for going to like their example was like a fashion designer going to a store and then taking a photo of this dress that they liked and then putting it on a mood board and writing notes about it and then putting the tablet away. And I almost wish that our devices were slightly clunkier or more like tactile.
Oh, that one is a big one for me too.
Yeah, because if it required more of me in one sense or another, I feel like I might be more cautious, more intentional with the way that I used these devices. And like last night, as I was working, I pulled my iPad off the keyboard and I pulled my Apple Pencil out. And basically, I told myself, if I'm going to be doing work right now, it needs to be like creative and fun. So I'm not going to open up the email app and tap out a response to some email that can wait until tomorrow with a pencil. But I can open up thoughts and do some mind mapping and think through a concept that might get lost in the shuffle of the week's work. And there was something about just that change. I even like changed my posture, where instead of being kind of reclined and passive, I became more active. And I found out that I only had so much of that type of work in me. And I did it, and then I put the device away because it wasn't possible for me to really multitask in that kind of mode. And like that's the kind of thing that I feel like I would need more of in this ideal device that we're talking about.
Yeah, the pencil hurts my heart because mine crapped out yesterday. But I've been really surprised at how much I've wanted to use the thing since we've gotten the new iteration and it's always right there ready to go. I use it in order to increase the amount of physical engagement with whatever I'm doing. And I do everything from scrolling articles to turning pages to highlighting text, you know, where that works, which is not everywhere because we're not there yet. But it's still unsatisfying because the texture is so boring all the time. Like, it's still sliding around on glass and it doesn't feel real yet, but at least it feels precise. And that feels so much more alive. It feels so much more like doing something than direct manipulation of a glass screen does, and certainly indirect manipulation of a pointer. I've been thinking a lot more about keyboards lately because they are this very tactile physical thing we're doing. But it's still all so monotonous compared to real activity. I love that choice that you made to sort of constrain what you were going to do by how it felt physically. And it's also pretty awesome that, as you know, as far behind the glorious future as we may be yet with these input methods, it's still pretty awesome that you have that choice now to sort of change the form factor a little and change the mode of interaction with what's happening on screen, which, you know, in the desktop computer era was not something we could really do.
Yeah, completely impossible.
And it's cool that we're getting there. I mean, it's the portability and sort of variable sizes of screens is like a big leap. And of course, like just 10 hours of battery without having to be plugged into the wall, you know, like we have... we've made a lot of progress towards it becoming real, but you know, we're about to have to talk about our favorite non-existent technology of heads up visual interaction with the digital world, because until it's there, it's still going to be this point, this one little rectangle of focus that it all boils down to. I mean, or several, now it's several little rectangles, you know, as we've discussed many times, but like there's still this separation of digital work and non-digital work that is a separation that's based on a physical posture or you know, a sensory environment. And you know, you can't sense what's happening in the digital environment directly. You can only sense it indirectly through this set of devices that we have. And like that, I think, is what creates the dichotomy. And if it were more blended, maybe it would feel more natural the way that we go in and out of various activities, because no matter how we carve it up, there's still this binary between stuff we're doing in our physical environment, stuff we're doing in our digital environment. Maybe the real world activity is just as scattered and chaotic. You know, when we're working in an office in the 1970s, we're still talking to people every few minutes or going to the proverbial water cooler or whatever it is. There's just as much kind of in and out of work, maybe. I don't know.
I feel like we just are people seeking distraction. So I think that we've just traded one form of distraction for another because this form of distraction is personalized. People didn't actually want to go and hang out at the water cooler and talk to their colleague, but that's the best distraction they could come up with in that environment. Uh-huh. And now they don't have to do that anymore because, by God, the distraction that they've custom created for themselves on the social network of their choice is always appealing and always interesting to open. But I just don't think that this generation or this period of time has more waste in that sense than other people have. I think that we've always found a way to busy ourselves, you know?
Absolutely. So like we can boil the question down then to just like how are you spending your time sort of productivity guru question. And I still feel like I want to walk through the day. Like, let's pretend that we have exactly the kinds of digital tools, services, networks that we want to have. And I don't think we have to get down to the level of designing them as products in order to do this. Like, let's pretend that the stuff works exactly the way we want to. What do we do? Like on a given work day, let's say. I mean, that's interesting. You mentioned earlier not distinguishing between what day of the week it is anymore. And I feel like I'm headed for that life again. You know, I've had it at various times in the past. I think I'm headed for that life again very soon. And the baby's also throwing everything into chaos. The question of whether days of the week should be spent differently, you know, in our ideal world, like maybe that's a separate question, but like, let's pretend it's a normal day. It doesn't matter what day of the week. What do we do first? Like, I mean, maybe I should start since this is my thought experiment.
Yeah, let's hear yours.
When I wake up, a lot of what I do first thing in the morning is already kind of right, because I think the most important thing about the first thing in the morning for me is that I actually don't want to connect to the internet yet. But I have to be more clear about what I mean, because I do want some information that has come in from the internet to specific devices to be available to me right away. I guess what I mean is I don't want to be taking in information about stuff that's going on outside of my immediate environment yet. So wake up, I want to like meditate and get a little exercise and get some caffeine and get some breakfast. And there is a role for my Apple Watch in almost all of that activity. Most of it is using local applications just for doing those things that don't connect to the internet except to sync or back up data. But I would probably put on a podcast or some music from the watch at that time. It's not until, I guess, like I've given up breakfast as a time when I'm going to want to pull out the iPad and start looking at news and email and sort of catching up with what happened in the world when I was asleep. And that's what I want. But, you know, what if there's an emergency earlier than that or overnight or whatever it is, you know, like that, who do I let in? Who do I put on my VIP list or whatever it is? Like that stuff has to be parsed out very carefully. But I strongly feel like I don't want to be online until breakfast. And that's not to say I don't want to use my computers until breakfast.
Right.
This is the first stopping point for me, is like, there's this very specific decision I want to make every day, like time to go on the grid. And it's when I'm good and ready. Does that resonate for you?
I think that your thoughts on notifications are interesting. I think that's part of the thing that has to get cracked for people to start feeling a bit more sane in the morning, at least people that are connected. You know, I guess the difference, right, is if I had like full notifications turned on, now it's different because I'm not on social media like I used to be. But if I would have had Twitter notifications on, Instagram notifications on, text message notifications on, et cetera, you know, every morning I would have woken up with dozens of messages or notifications, or at least quite a few. Some other people, this might not be a problem for. They might only wake up with like one or two text messages. But I feel like everybody at this point is waking up feeling an obligation to resume conversations or being in networks or audiences.
Yeah.
And for me, it's like, I think that in this idealistic version of my morning, I would want my phone or my device to be able to give me notifications, but only certain ones that it would know that I want to see most,
yeah,
or were important. So, you know, like right now, I feel like the dichotomy is either you have this do not disturb mode turned on and then nothing gets through, or you have nothing really keeping you from seeing everything and everything gets through. And there needs to be this middle ground. Like I totally agree with that.
I actually feel like grouping of notifications in iOS 11 or whenever that came out, maybe it was 12, has helped create an intermediate level, but it's still too close to that yes or no mode. But like at least all of the Instagram notifications, theoretical Instagram notifications are like piled up on top of each other. So you don't have to scroll through them all.
Maybe part of it is just because I don't trust it yet.
Hmm.
If anyone has been using Do Not Disturb for years, I feel like it's burned you one or two times.
Yeah, sure.
Where, you know, not like something horrible has happened, but, I wish I would have seen that an hour ago, you know?
Yep.
And so I wake up in the morning and, like I said, I just turned that thing back on. And I actually circumvent it just in case it has wronged me in some way. And this ideal version of these devices would never make me question that.
Hi, Internet friends. It's John here. Internet Friends is brought to you by my work at Ablaze Interactions, where I solve communication problems for clients who work to repair our world. I can help with information architecture to transform your website, content strategy to tell the right story and reach the right audience, and writing and editing to find the authentic voice of your company or organization, your product, or your idea. Ablaze Interactions has consulted for world-renowned events, political candidates, law firms, nonprofits, and great apps on the App Store. Light up your ideas. Go to ablaze.co and let me know if you're interested in working together.
Something beforehand, in my ideal morning, by the way, is I would like my Apple Watch-like device to gently tap me on the wrist to wake me up, but not at any specific time.
Mm.
I would want it to wake me up when it senses that I'm in a light phase of sleep, when the sun has risen, maybe. I don't know.
Auto
sleep
purports to do that. Have you not tried that?
I haven't
either, because actually I did try it and it didn't work. Like the first time it shipped.
Yeah, I think that's what happened to me too.
Yeah. But they are already promising that feature. You know, that's a matter of time, I think. And I'm very excited for that too, because I don't want to wake up at exactly 6:00 every day. I want to wake up as close to that as possible, never after a certain time.
Right.
This is the kind of future we should have when we have all of these intimate health tracking devices taking care of us that way.
Here's the second part of my wish that I don't think auto sleep can do just yet, which is I don't want it to stop tapping me until I actually stand.
Yeah.
Because I'm the kind of person that will push snooze. In fact, in college, I was so bad about getting up for my early classes that I bought one of those clocky alarms, which was an alarm on wheels. Did you ever see those?
No.
It's literally an alarm that has wheels, and you would set it at night, and then it would literally jump off your nightstand and start running around, and you had to get up and catch it.
Oh, my.
And I missed enough classes that I went to Sharper Image to date that and bought that. And I stopped missing the classes because I had to stand up and literally chase this annoying alarm.
That's hilarious.
And it worked. It worked really well. I mean, I wouldn't have wanted to do that every day, but it certainly conditioned me in a way that I didn't hit the snooze button anymore. And I need the same thing for my Apple Watch.
The switch on the built-in alarm that lets you disable snooze for a particular alarm is such a trap, because you do that, you turn off snooze, then your alarm goes off, and then the only option is stop.
Yes, exactly.
So then you just turn it off, and then it doesn't wake you.
Yes,
again.
Exactly. Exactly. So I wanted to use its powerful internal guts to tell when I'm standing, because it obviously knows when I'm standing, and that's the only way to, you know, turn off the alarm. I'll throw in an extra bit of automation that I would love to have that has just always been a dream of mine since we're talking about this idealistic future, which is, this is the only piece of home automation that I actually care about. Like, I have a smart lock and that's fine. And I have a couple of smart bulbs, but that was just because it was the most convenient thing to do. I want a smart shower. I want to be able to, as soon as it senses that I'm up, turn the shower on to the precise and perfect temperature so that I get right in it. That just sounds so amazing to me, and I'm desperate for that future.
How about heats the water up in a tank, and then it turns on when you step in, and then turns off when you step out?
That sounds lovely. I love that.
I would shell out for that.
It's another way of getting me up because I really don't want to waste water.
Yeah.
So, you know, if I'm already standing because of my Apple Watch.
Oh, that's an interesting insight.
And now there's this shower going that I don't want to waste the water for. I'm definitely not like laying back down to rest, quote unquote, for a few minutes, you know. This is the thing, right? It's like I feel like for so often our technology, our devices have done things that made us a little slower or a little more disjointed. And like my desire is always to use these things as like real tools that make me a better person or make me have a better day. And I get confounded sometimes because I can't figure out the way to like make those things just happen seamlessly. There's too much red tape. I'm ready for this future that can predict my behavior in a healthy way and help me be a better person for it.
Yeah. And the kind of thing it needs to be able to do is adjust based on your calendar and stuff. You know, like if you have an event and it's an important event or it's on the work calendar or whatever it is, like it should be real serious about the alarm clock. But if it's Sunday and you don't have anything, it should.
Yeah.
This is the thing, is that it's got to be very comprehensive. And, it, you know, fortunately, Apple does at least seem to be building toward a Siri that can understand all of that stuff across compartments, because the alternative would be the all-seeing eye of Google or whatever, knowing everything about you and selling things to you to make your life better. And the in-between place that we are right now has like almost more drawbacks than we had before we were even close.
To get to breakfast or news or wherever it is that you are.
Yes.
I think the thing that I want is I want an iPad that has multiple modes.
Mm-hmm.
And I almost could do that with these app limits that exist now in iOS 12. But I would need like 5 different versions of that, or like 5 different versions of the downtime.
Uh-huh.
But I wish that I had like buttons that I could click that said different things like plan or review or create.
Yeah.
And clicking those would actually remove a bunch of apps that don't fit that and push forward a bunch of apps that do.
Mm-hmm.
So I could click a button and the task manager, the calendar, you know, those types of apps would be front and center. Or I could click another button and photos and Lightroom and a video editing app and Ferrite, an audio editing app, would all be there.
Yeah.
That would be so amazing, because I find that just saying exclude everything doesn't really work. And it's so strange. Like the calculator gets cut out with downtime. And obviously you can add that to never exclude, but that doesn't really feel right.
Yeah.
I'm not addicted to the calculator, right? But
yeah.
I am addicted to distracting things, or I am more often the type of person that will skip an important step and open up email. And I want to just remove that temporarily and put something else in front of me to prioritize that.
Let's like move to the middle of the day, the action phase of the day. You know, a lot, we have kind of already started talking about the way we work and how we would like for that to change. And, you know, I think as far as the time management of that goes, it's enough to say, you know, a mix of activities and, you know, the ability to stay stimulated and engaged instead of sitting and staring in one position for the whole time or whatever. And yeah, like you're saying, we're starting to get the tools to do the work on the digital stuff we make in a more human interactive way. The thing that that I still feel like is really far behind technologically is the communication part. And, you know, I don't want to necessarily limit it to social media per se, but like the way that we keep in touch with people who are not physically present with us during the day, it has to happen in some situations. And in others, like, it's just nice. If I miss anything, it's this. It's the ability to sort of check in with what anyone else I know is doing instead of just like who's around, you know? And like, I am starting to have more, just to do more random texts of people and like actually have more like ongoing group threads going. And that's a nice way of sort of supplementing like social interactions throughout the day without having to kind of do the passive social media thing. So that's nice. But like, it's still, that stuff is nowhere close to the kind of physical interaction that you're describing with the creative stuff. And like, I understand that people are using their cameras and putting AR dog faces on themselves or whatever it is to bring themselves more into the communication that they're doing. But like, I still find stories, like, let's just use the word that all the products are using, like stories as a way of interacting with people. I still find that very linear and one-dimensional and unreal feeling. It doesn't the camera doesn't help that much the way that the pencil helps you feel like the document you're working on is real. Assuming that this is good, assuming that the ability to virtually communicate with people throughout the course of a day is good, like how could that be better in the same way that we're describing working on things getting better?
Have you used the app Marco Polo at all?
No, no idea what that is.
It's you sending a video message to a friend, them watching it, and then sending one back, and back and forth you go over and over again. So it's asynchronous. And I don't use it, but I know a few people who do. And I've heard from a few people that it's like their favorite app because it's helped resurrect relationships that have gone dormant because of moving or time or, you know, whatever reason. It certainly seems like it is for people who already have no stigma about sticking a camera in front of their face and talking without any kind of response. I don't find myself to be in that category of people, but I think that plenty of people are there and will only continue to be there. And I get it because it is certainly the most intimate type of platform that I think that exists, like outside of an actual phone call or an actual FaceTime call, because you're basically dedicating all of your energy, all of your attention to a singular message for one person. And I believe that you can like have group Marco Polos. Yeah, you can have group Marco Polos. And you could probably, there's probably some way to like send them individually to different people. I have no idea. But you get what I'm saying, right? Like there's something special there that I think has to be tapped into in the future of communication.
The asynchronous nature of it, the combination of the asynchronous nature of it and the sort of full spectrum, like real presence.
Yeah, because I think we've realized is we're all, there's no way that we're going backwards.
Yeah.
There's no way that we're all going to spend time on the phone with people every day or spend time on like FaceTime calls with people every day. I mean, I don't think that these Amazon and Google devices that like have a camera connected to them.
And Facebook devices,
yes, that have a camera connected to them are the way forward. That just doesn't seem like that fits with our lives. And I imagine that over time we will probably desire more privacy, not less privacy. So that feels even more out of the norm of what might be true in the future.
Yeah.
But the ability, like I have a friend who's in Florida now. His name's John. It's not you.
Yeah.
And another John.
I'm not in Florida.
You are not in Florida. And I don't talk to him much because he's in Florida. That's that. You know, and he's not really a texter, you know, like that's a weird thing, but like, I don't feel like everyone is a texter.
Yeah, totally.
That just doesn't like necessarily fit everyone's personality. And like, I don't necessarily feel like I hear his voice when he like sends me a text, but I could see a world where we like caught up that way. And even like phone calls, like I've had like only maybe 3 or 4 phone calls with him in the last few years because neither of us really do that either. So I don't know. I don't know exactly what that means, but I feel like there has to be a way for us to feel like we have more intimate communication with one another in the same kind of asynchronous pattern that text messaging has so utilized.
It's really interesting. I've never had a conversation that way because it's not walkie-talkie. Walkie-talkie is real time. It's the whatever the voice memo thing in Messages is called.
Yeah.
And like I have sent those before, but only in like I'm driving and don't want to like look and see if the autocorrect is right.
Yeah.
From dictating situations.
And they always feel like a burden,
yeah,
to me.
They do.
Like I know that I am burdening somebody by making them hold their phone awkwardly up to their ear.
Right.
Yeah. So I very rarely do it.
Yeah. And so I've never had a back and forth with a real-time medium like audio or video that was sent and received asynchronously. So I don't know how it would flow. Obviously, people are doing it. Maybe it's easier with video than audio because audio is harder to pay attention to. And, you know, you have to keep it short. But it's sort of interesting to think about how I would, you know, you wouldn't reply to something someone said. It wouldn't be like, hey, Drew, how's it going? Send 20 minutes later.
Pretty good.
Oh, it's good, man. I'm good. How are you? Send. You know, like that's not how it works. So like I don't know what the conversational dynamics are, but the idea that you, to get back to sort of the time management aspect of this question that got us going down this road, the idea of managing, of like having an inbox of that kind of communication to check when it's, when you're ready. There is something interesting to me about that. I guess like it's explicitly not urgent, like that, that kind of intimate communication method. Like you're not going to do that to say, oh my God, the house is on fire.
Right.
You know, like, so that's going to be a call. So, you know, that if you get something in that inbox, you don't have to look at it right away. And then if you can compartmentalize working and communicating so that you can take a break by going and looking at 16 like short video messages people sent you instead of checking a feed of like miscellaneous crap with ads mixed in, like that does sound a lot more satisfying. It's all in how the queue is managed. There's two questions I have about it. What is the experience of interacting with all the stuff that you've received? And like, what is the conversational dynamic that you use when you respond? Like, do you go through and respond one at a time? Because they're short, I almost want to interview a Marco Polo user to see what the answer is. Because if they're short messages, like how much do you end that message with an expectation of a response? Or are they all just sort of for their own sake? I think that you're onto something by bringing this up, because it is a lot more, it's a lot richer than the asynchronous method of social media posts as far as keeping up with people. It's richer than text messaging too. And we have set a lot of those expectations with the ongoing text conversations we have with people of like, you do kind of pause and wait for the person to respond, but if they don't respond for a day, that's not unusual.
Right.
But then you do come back and say, sorry, I was doing this or that. You put so much more into a video that I wonder if you would have more anticipation than you would from a text message. I don't know. There's definitely something that makes me want this. And I would use it as a way of packing a bunch of meaningful interaction in with people, but not having to do it ambiently all the time.
I think an important feature to note that Marco Polo has is a fast forward feature where you basically 2x the person's conversation.
Uh-huh.
So if you do have that long-winded friend who, you know, starts telling the story or gets distracted or something, you can move the conversation along without feeling stuck in it. And I think I would imagine that many people use that.
Imagine if you could do that in a real face-to-face conversation.
Right. Yes, exactly. Exactly. An example of it in real-world use for me is my wife was using it to talk with friends who all met together often in Florida. And so they had like a 5-person group chat. And one of those people only checked in like every 2 weeks and probably skipped a bunch of the messages and just read the last two. And a lot of the people listened to all the messages and responded to all of them. And over time, it sort of died. And I wonder if that's a common thing with Marco Polo is, you know, these only are sustained for so long. But I would wager that there's probably people who have been using it for years and are going on strong having these conversations back and forth. And to me, I feel like you already invented the follow-up to this in a conversation we had a long time ago about the future of Apple's augmented reality world.
Yeah, was it Animoji messages?
Yes, exactly. I love the idea of being able to not have a camera in my face, but send a video type message to somebody else that passively takes up a portion of their screen, mm-hmm. which is now on glasses in front of their face, that is way better than those voice memos in iMessage, and similar but not necessarily the same as these Marco Polos. Uh-huh. It also feels very much to me like the way that people communicated in the Ender's Game series, which I think was like exactly this, like little faces popping up in their brain or something and chatting back and forth. And you could choose to like be present and chat or just listen to the message and respond at your own time. And I don't know. I just feel like that has to be the future of communication. And you use the word richer. And I think that is the word that has to be targeted, mm-hmm. is it just has to feel richer than what we currently have.
Hello, internet friends. It's Drew. And I want to tell you about Keyhouse. There's a quote from Kurt Vonnegut that I read tucked away in an essay he wrote about the seasons, where he said that he thought that the idea of four seasons was a lie. Instead, we should have six. Fall doesn't move to winter, and winter doesn't move to spring. Instead, he thought the season should be like so. Summer, fall, locking, winter, unlocking, and spring. I believe there's a beautiful poetry to the idea that creation itself requires a time of unlocking before anything of substance can bloom. And perhaps you're listening to this message right now, stuck between what you're doing and what you want to do for the rest of your life, realizing that you might be in that cruel season of unlocking too. Find your own space for unlocking. Go to Keyhouse, KEYHOU.SE, and let's find the key.
So that's kind of the middle of the day. I think that leads naturally into what I would ask you about the end of your ideal day online. And that seems like an obvious note to kind of conclude with, because I think that is in some ways the most ambiguous of the modes of daily life that we have online right now. It's like, when are you gone? When do you go to bed? Like, when do you, or when do you go offline in relation to when do you go to bed? Like, and how do people know? Remember when people used to tweet good night Twitter?
And before that, the AIM away messages and that type of thing.
Right.
It was very common to make it clear that you were not, that you were AFK.
Yeah. And we've talked about that. We've talked about the status thing and how much that would help. And, you know, I wish that do not disturb, you know, like, here's a lighter weight version of it. You know, I've talked about like red, yellow, green as an internet protocol that every app would have to respect. Like, let's just take it down a notch and say, like, what if do not disturb was a signal that went out to all of your like iCloud contacts, so that when somebody opened an iMessage thread with you, it said to them, this person is on do not disturb. Like, I think that's something I would always want, but maybe there should be a mode that's like secret do not disturb and a mode that's public do not disturb or something. But like sending a signal that I'm shutting down now, I think is kind of important. And you don't want to, I mean, like currently what I do is like the three people that I'm texting with enough of the day to say, hey, I'm going to go to bed now. I say it to all of them. And I feel like the ambiguity that we have at the end of our day online is a big part of the problem with the expectations that people have for when people are and aren't online. You know, like I want my boss to get a pop-up that says, John has gone offline and may not get this message until tomorrow. Do you understand? You know, and like have them have to say yes to that.
Yeah.
It may not be the same signal that I want to send to everybody, but I do wish there was a way to say to the internet, I'm signing off for the night.
I mean, this is obviously the time period where I started thinking about all of this last night, inadvertently. Something that I think is interesting is that I actually feel like that type of behavior still exists. It just exists in like a different part of the internet that maybe you and I aren't privy to, which to me is like a semblance of good news, right? That it still is prevailing and that this type of behavior of like logging off and letting the world know this weird communal ritual is ongoing. I watched a Twitch stream a few days ago, which I am not a game stream watcher, evident by the fact that I don't even know how to title that. Somebody that I follow on YouTube was doing a stream on Twitch, and I was like doing something very passive and was wanting to kill a little time, and I watched the stream, and I would note as people came on and in that chat would say hello, and everyone would say hello to them. And then people would say, oh, it's a different time zone for me. It's really late. I need to go to bed. And people would like say to them kindly, go to bed, like get some sleep. And they'd say, okay, I'm logging off. Goodbye. And people would say, bye, bye, bye. You know, the Twitch chat would be full of that.
Yeah.
And I found that very like sweet that still exists.
Yeah.
And it kind of made me realize that some of the internet that I'm nostalgic for certainly is nostalgic because of the age I was when that happened. And, you know, that was at an age when I said goodnight to my family,
right,
to my parents.
Yeah.
And now I don't say goodnight to anybody because I fall asleep when I determine it, you know, and that's sort of that. And if I did a poll to see the ages of everyone that's sitting around in chat rooms on Twitch, I would wager that they're younger, that they skew younger. And maybe that's just part of the internet for younger people, is finding that community and sharing moments like that with them. Does that make sense? Is that like, I don't know how to fully describe that or capture that, but I was just confounded that that still is something happening.
Well, it makes sense in an environment when people are in a live experience together and interacting in a chat medium on the periphery of something real that's happening. Streaming is kind of the one medium where those kinds of manners, it's not just that they still exist there, it's that they kind of feel like good manners in that situation.
Right.
You know, like if you're doing a Facebook Live, which I've actually only ever done maybe once, when somebody comes in, it pops up and you want to be like, hi, hey, so, you know, Drew,
yeah,
nice to see you in here. And then when they go, even if they don't say anything, like I see a lot of people say, oh, bye, Drew, when somebody signs off.
Right.
Because something's happening. It's interesting that you connected that to childhood, to like family dynamics, because I think that is suggestive of the level of intimacy that obtains when you're like in a stream with somebody that's where something's really happening live on the other side of the screen. And that is the opposite dynamic from the one we've been talking about. And, you know, obviously the other place you say goodbye is when you're hanging up on a call.
Right.
But calls don't have that casual hanging out quality that being signed in on a stream has for the viewers. Checking in on a live thing and then checking back out, you know, that's particular to the internet. That's a particular internet dynamic of coming online and going offline. And it's almost a more literal representation of what is happening abstractly in our minds every day when we come online, when we wake up and like open the feed and start scrolling.
Yeah.
And then when we check back out, because that's just in our minds and it's not this explicit state, like being on a stream or not. You know, it's weird to say goodbye, but Twitter approached that level of realness at times. And that was when people would say, okay, I'm going, you know, like when something, some big thing was going down, some big news event where everyone was on Twitter together. It hasn't been one of those in a long time that I can recall, you know, like a chase or something. Like the one that's most vivid in my mind is the Boston Marathon bombing.
Yeah.
Like I remember people really kind of staying up late to watch that pursuit happen. And I don't know why that one in particular sticks out to me. But like when somebody has to go that's been participating, you know, like what else can you do but say like, look, I can't do this. Like I have to crash now. Like I'm signing off.
Yeah. This conversation has made me realize that what we have is synchronous, real-time, intimate conversations in asynchronous social platforms. And I really want the opposite. I really prefer asynchronous, intimate conversations so that I can have more of them, and synchronous social media, synchronous social media platforms where I have to be fully present for it. And if I'm not, I'm just not. Like, you would never scroll back through a Twitch chat to see what you missed.
Right.
And that has to be so much more healthy than the behavior of these asynchronous networks. Now, obviously, you could just constantly find a new Twitch chat to watch. But for me and the type of person that I am, I feel like that would flow so much better and would keep me so much less distracted and also in more conversation and in more community.
That's interesting that it's got that it's flipped. Like, let's make a point to send more videos.
Yeah.
Let's like replace our text messages with video messages or something.
Sure.
And like, you know, just see how that goes.
And for me, I think that this ties neatly back into what you were talking about, because I think for me, when I'm winding down at the end of the night, I don't want to be knocked offline. Like, you know, I set this downtime feature on my phone so that at 10 p.m. all these apps turn off. And I actually found that a not so pleasing experience. I was like in the middle of something and it was like, oh, no more of this. So of course I'm just going to subvert that and go around it until I'm good and ready to be offline. But what I want is I want more of a reason to not be online or more of a reason to be on. And I think that something that feels in the moment, like I'm there or I'm not there, makes me make that choice more consciously. Like, do I want to invest my time in this online world or do I just want to be offline now? And I feel like that is such a better way of going about things. You wouldn't be in these perpetually online communities if you were to go and take a walk. And I want to differentiate that time offline and time online better, where it just doesn't feel that way right now. And that's what I think I crave for that nightly ritual, is a reason to be on and then a reason to be off.